May it please the court. I'm Philip Vaglia. I, along with my co-counsel Brittany Bell-Eater, represent the appellant GMAC in this case. The case involves a question of lien priority in which an order granting summary judgment disregarded statutory lien priorities and rendered the super priority provision of the Colorado Common Interest Ownership Act meaningless. There's no authority, statutory or otherwise, for allowing an HOA to do what happened in this case. The HOA elevated its junior lien position to its super priority lien position and foreclosed from the senior position. As such, the foreclosure in this case was necessarily then conducted from the third position.
Pardon me, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't you agree that that super lien had priority over the mortgage in this case, that super lien part?
Correct. The panel on which you sat and issued the decision in BA Mortgage Quail Creek Condominiums case specifically recognized that the HOA has an assessment lien, singular. It's a lien. However, the super priority portion is limited to the extent, your opinion wrote, to 6 months worth of assessments that accrue before the foreclosure.
Pardon me, but understanding that, isn't it a little bit off to say that that they weren't allowed to foreclose at least on that?
The answer, Your Honor, is when you look at the decree, you have to go back and look at the decree of foreclosure that issued in the case. Commonsensically, it makes sense to start at the beginning. That decree of foreclosure provided that the interest of the HOA was such that it was prior and superior to the interest of all of the defendants. Well, that's not true. Go back and look at the decision in Quail Creek. Understand that the HOA has an assessment lien, but only a very small part of it has priority.
Again, understanding that, weren't they entitled to foreclose on that?
If they foreclosed only on their super lien, then that would have given the lender the opportunity to go ahead and redeem, because you only redeem from a junior position. Senior lien holders don't redeem.
Well, it strikes me, again, pardon me for interrupting, but it strikes me that we got a you know, let's make sure we get our terms straight here.
Okay.
First, it's clear the GMAC did not act to cure. That time came and went.
Correct.
And GMAC did nothing. I think that's clear from the record, right?
Exactly.
So we're talking about redemption here.
Correct.
So it's also clear, I think, that the association was entitled to foreclose on the super lien.
It was, and that then sets the table for the problem that occurred here. It could foreclose from the super lien position to the tune of 6 months worth of assessments. But once it added the remaining part of the assessment to the super lien, what happened? Arithmetically, that super lien is limited to 6 months worth of assessments. But when you add all the assessments that are to be a third lien into the position of the first, then that emasculates 38.33.3-316 in establishing the super priority lien to begin with. So yes, Your Honor, you're 100% right. It could foreclose that super lien. But when they added the non-prioritized portion, in effect, the third lien that they're allowed to have, when they added those two together, then they could not foreclose. They couldn't state, well, we've got the super lien, we can foreclose, and we can foreclose out the holder of the first deed of trust.
But that got fixed, didn't it? Because the trial court granted your motion to clarify the judgment,
correct,
which sorted out the various lien priorities. But then it may have had another problem. Now, if the, and I'm going directly to that, if the association could foreclose on the super lien part and then that would allow you to redeem. Don't you have to redeem the entire amount that the investors put forth in this case, which was $11,000?
No.
Why not?
As a junior lien holder, you only redeem what is prior to you. So let's say that the HOA had a $600 lien and the lender had a $1 million first deed of trust. And the remaining assessments for the HOA were $10,000. Here's the schematic. You've got a first, then super priority lien, $600. You've got $1 million second. You've then got a third for $10,000. When you add the third to the first, look at what it does to the redemption rights of the second under 3833-302. It makes that second lien holder, who only has to pay off the $600, because that's all that's in front of the first deed of trust, who we're saying is in second place, it makes that lien holder pay amounts that are not contemplated under 3833.3-3.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but I'm very confused now. The argument you're making to me sounds like an argument on cure.
No.
It doesn't sound to me like redemption after a sheriff's sale, which is what happened in this case.
Correct.
The investors, the folks who bought, and we'll call them that for the sake of this argument, the investors paid $11,000 at the sheriff's sale. Am I right about
Correct,
that?
Your Honor.
Don't the redemption statutes say that you redeem what is paid? And if that isn't so, why isn't the answer here that if you were redeeming, that you should have paid the $11,000?
The answer has several prongs to it. First, the $11,000 was not the amount of the super lien. And the disconnect really comes with regard to the facts of the case. What GMAC did in this case was file an emergency motion with the trial court to try to clarify the misstatements that were reflected in the foreclosure decree. Contemporaneously, GMAC did not seek to redeem or partially redeem. GMAC paid $2,000 into the registry fund of the court, hoping that that would be enough to do what? To pay off the lien. The super lien.
Although there's no statutory authorization for that. Paying into the registry of the court.
No.
So you led the court into error, essentially.
No, Your Honor, not at all. We gave the court all of the information in the motion to clarify the foreclosure decree, told the court exactly what we were doing. We said, look, here's what we're going to do. We've put money into the registry fund in the event that you let us pay off the lien. We are also filing a notice of intent to redeem, even though we don't think that we have to redeem. We're not junior to anyone, because by virtue of them combining their first and third lien positions and attempting to foreclose from the first, they've violated the super lien priority statute.
But ordinarily, you wouldn't redeem in the court anyway.
No, not at all.
Ideally, you would have bid in at the 120. You didn't do that.
Well,
and then when you have a chance to redeem, you go down and you redeem the same office in the same place that you would have cured.
In part, that's 100% correct, especially with regard to this argument that what this case involved was an attempt by GMAC to engage in a partial redemption. Our statutes don't talk about redemption or its functional equivalent. They don't talk about de facto redemption. If you're going to redeem, you have to contact the sheriff, find out what the sheriff wants, $11,000, and then pay that to the sheriff in certified funds. There was no effort whatsoever by GMAC to partially redeem, to fully redeem, to do anything other than take a two-pronged approach. When you redeem, there are two parts. One is putting in a notice of intent to redeem, and then sometime later, pay the money to the sheriff. As soon as GMAC became active in the case, they took part of that prong and sent in the notice of intent to redeem, just in case it had to redeem, and then went to the court to say, wait a minute, time out. This order is wrong. They don't have priority as to the interest of all of the defendants. They only have a segmented six-month priority. We need to ask you to correct that. And by the way, here's what we're doing. In the event that you give us the opportunity to pay off the lien in front of us, we've put money into the registry fund. As a consequence, GMAC put itself into a position where its redemption rights had been perfected. So in this case, when the court issued its order on summary judgment and reversed the order that clarified that erroneous foreclosure decree, what the court needed to do was put GMAC back in the position that it was when it issued the order clarifying the prior foreclosure.
The council, couldn't GMAC have put itself in that position by going forward with that process? I mean, it filed the intent to redeem, so why not take that extra step?
You know, a great question, because what happened was the court recognized that the foreclosure decree was erroneous, recognized that it was wrong, and issued an order indicating, GMAC, you're right, their priority is only to the tune of 6 months. The sheriff's sale was subject to your first deed of trust. So at that point, GMAC had no need to, nor could it, redeem, because the court had already told GMAC, your interest is in first position. Pay off the lien from the funds that are in the registry account. So there was no need to redeem or take any further efforts with the sheriff. I will keep the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Brian Sullivan, 33942, appearing on behalf of Stone Pine Investments, LLC, and North Glen Redevelopment Partners.
Mr. Sullivan, let me ask you, how in the world can we avoid a situation where GMAC is entitled to rely upon an order of the court? In other words, isn't this the perfect situation where there are equitable reasons to extend the period of redemption?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. I think it's really telling that less than 10 days ago, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals issued its opinion in Clear One Communications versus Yang on June 27th, in which it was held that the invited error doctrine precludes a party from arguing that the district court erred in adopting a proposition that the party had urged the district court to adopt.
How did they invite error, though? Their position was, look, the statute is clear. The first priority status is exhausted after a small part of the component of overhang. And so we really are in a first position on that sheriff's sale. I mean, that's not exactly inviting error, is it?
Well, Your Honor, the association's lien is not two liens, as GMAC alleges. Section 316 of the Colorado Common Interest Ownership Act, or Kiowa, is clear that an association is to have one lien on real property, with a portion of said lien having a priority over a first mortgage and a portion being junior. The statute is clear on its face and must be enforced as written. Section 316.11 of Kiowa permits foreclosure by an association and does not require in any shape or form that an association's lien be split or bifurcated when the foreclosure is initiated.
Counsel, but why does it matter whether we view this as two separate liens of differing priorities with the middle lien, or as one lien with two subparts that have different priorities? I mean, why does that matter?
Because If there were a requirement of two separate liens, it would be a colossal waste of private and judicial resources. Essentially, twice as many judicial foreclosures would clog the dockets in district courts throughout the state, and it would not serve the public interest.
Pardon me, Mr. Sullivan, but I want to challenge that statement a little bit, and I want you to explain to me why, because of the following point. I think it's pretty clear that once the priorities get arranged properly here, the association certainly had a super lien that it was entitled to foreclose on. After that, though, its next collection opportunity, assuming none of this other stuff happened, its next collection opportunity on the rest would have been after the mortgage got paid off, right?
That is correct, Your Honor, but...
And so if that's the case, where does the argument come from that all of a sudden we're doubling the number of foreclosure proceedings?
Well, that argument is based on the imposition on the HOA to basically do separate foreclosures, but I understand the argument that you're making, and that may be true to a certain extent, but it's so important in this case to recognize that GMAC slumbered on their rights. They had the opportunity to cure. They had the opportunity to redeem. They chose to litigate this in the courts. It's also really important to note that in terms of their doing that, they didn't even notify the bona fide purchasers at sale when they attempted, in my opinion, to mislead the district court.
Mr. Sullivan, they weren't slumbering once they got an order signed by the district court.
They certainly didn't. But the idea that a foreclosure was conducted and they didn't choose to respond, they didn't choose to attack the underlying foreclosure itself. Rather, they allowed the foreclosure to take place and then attempted to disenfranchise the bona fide purchasers.
So you're not suggesting that conduct, ill-advised perhaps, but you're not suggesting it was fraudulent?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
And how would the investors, your clients, be disenfranchised, as you say, when they had notice of GMAC's 2005, I think 11-4-2005 recorded deed of trust? I mean, wouldn't that have put them on notice that there's an interest out there? And why would they be innocent purchasers for value?
Because there was a judicial order foreclosing the property, setting the stage that this was a priority, foreclosing out all other interests, including GMAC. So while it was evident that GMAC had a recorded interest, it had been foreclosed by court order. And it's so important to keep in mind that 38-38-501 holds that the issuance of a sheriff's deed is prima facie evidence of fee simple title. It was something that the investors, the bona fide purchasers at sale, felt they could rely on when they bought the property at sale.
Mr. Sullivan, I'd like to, if I may please, change the focus a little bit. You've made a couple comments about suggesting that GMAC was misleading people. Where is there evidence for that in the record?
In the district court, the argument was made that they were allowed to do what in effect they did, which was to deposit funds in the court registry. That is not how you redeem a property that has gone through to foreclosure.
I understand that that's not how one redeems a property, but how is that evidence of misleading? Because I think that it's important that we choose our words carefully here.
Absolutely.
So how is that evidence of misleading as opposed to taking a particular legal position?
Maybe the choice of the word misleading was a bad choice of words, but it's important to note that now, at this point in time, late in the game, now they're asking that they be allowed to redeem in full when that isn't the argument that they put forth to the district court.
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Sullivan, the position is, look, we relied upon a ruling by the court.
Right.
And we relied in good faith on that ruling by the court. By now the slumbering argument is on the other the other foot. We were put to sleep as a result of the order and lost our right to redeem. So the argument is, as I understand it, an equitable one.
Well, you know, the equitable argument, that is an interesting one, Your Honor, because GMAC is effectively asking us to invalidate Section 316 of Kiowa, arguing ironically that the statute essentially should not do harm to a lien holder who not only slumbered on the rights but also proactively took actions contrary to statute without notice to the bona fide purchasers at sale. So GMAC, they're seeking equitable relief, but they don't come to the court with clean hands. This was properly recognized by the district court.
How do you define clean hands, Mr. Sullivan?
Your Honor, I think that when there is a bona fide purchaser at sale and GMAC wishes to challenge that foreclosure, I think it's very prudent to notify the bona fide purchasers of sale of the new action that they brought and the very idea that they opposed their attempt to intervene. It doesn't even pass the giggle test, Your Honor. A bona fide purchaser...
Well, is clean hands defined as not passing the giggle test, or doesn't the definition of clean hands have to do more with whether the act was fraudulent, unconscionable, in bad faith?
No, Your Honor, I think it's... I don't want to get too deep into the definitions of those types of words, but I want to stress that they should have had a duty to notify the bona fide purchasers at sale. And I can't... To this day, they haven't given us a reasonable explanation as to why they felt it was prudent to not notify the bona fide purchasers of sale, or why they thought that the bona fide purchasers at sale were not allowed to intervene. And this court clearly recognized that they were allowed to intervene, and we had to go back to district court because of...
But does opposing an intervention motion equate with unclean hands?
Absolutely not. No, Your Honor.
And does relying on a district court order that recognize the rights or purported to recognize the rights, does that equate with unclean hands?
It does not, but I would have to go back to the invited error doctrine. They invited that error, and they have to live by that. If they induce the court to enter into that order, then they are stuck with that, and that is a problem of their own making. And I just did also want to make clear that, you know, this property, it's been tied up for 5 years now. And when the foreclosure took place in 06, the investors attempted to take possession of the property. GMAC changed the locks. The investors changed the locks again. GMAC changed the locks again. So the investors were not able to gain access to the property. The property sat there empty until 2010, until the investors got a favorable ruling in district court. The property, the GMAC did not pay the HOA dues. They did nothing to improve the property. Once the district court ordered that the investors could take possession of the property, they paid off all the HOA dues. They renovated the property. There's now a renter in there, and it's beneficial use of the property is being made. And for that reason, I'd just like to state, pursuant to Colorado Appellate Rules 28B 39.5, the owners request their attorney's fees and costs incurred in defending against this appeal. Even if the appellees prevail, there's no bond for them to look towards.
Where in the record do we have all this information about what happened afterwards?
And so I apologize. That is not actually on the record.
Mr. Sullivan, go back and spend a little more time on this invited error argument, if you wouldn't mind, please. On the one hand, I can see arguing a bad instruction that's given to the jury and then being barred from appealing on the basis of that instruction under an invited error doctrine. But I'm having difficulty here seeing where the invited error is in making an argument to the court that
prevailed, and the court issuing an order that's not necessarily contrary to law or statute.
Well, Your Honor, as even the district court notes, you know, if GMAC had wished to pay only the super priority portion of assessments in this action, it should have done so prior to the sheriff's sale. And there was a lot of easy, simple things that they could have done. They chose to argue this in the courts. They chose to take this argument to the district court. They led the court down the path that the district court ultimately accepted, and I understand what you're saying, and I respect that. It raises a good point, but at the same time, you know, I think that this Clear One Communications case is bringing this to light, that they are not allowed to complain that here they are relying on an order that they induced the court to accept.
It's Clear One, a case involving equity.
And Clear One Communications versus Yang, I don't believe that was an equitable case, but I believe that decision and that direct quote is very applicable to this case.
I can't recall, Mr. Sullivan, was that case filed as part of a supplemental authority or?
And Clear One Communications,
is it presented here as part of supplemental authority?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Your Honor. No, it wasn't. So, in closing, GMAC ignored notices concerning the HOA's foreclosure at their own peril. They waited until the foreclosure sale to intervene. Why they did that is confounding when one considers how much time, money, and court resources could have been saved by opening their mail and responsibly dealing with it then. If GMAC were successful, it would send a chilling message to the investor community and throw the entire foreclosure process into uncertainty. Foreclosure sales are meant to promote active bidding. Redemption statutes pay off debts at sale while putting property back into the hands of those that will put it to good, productive use. Thank you.
Sure. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Pretty close, Your Honor. Vaglia.
Vaglia. All right. In light of the citation of the Clear One Communications case to us today, both counsel can send us a letter directly addressed to us individually in the next 5 days. Just a paragraph dealing with your position on Clear One, if you want to do that.
No, I can address it right now.
All right, fine.
There is no issue before you.
Okay.
With regard to the invited error doctrine. Most of the cases that we're familiar with under that doctrine are exactly like Your Honor commented, and that is especially in criminal cases where defendant submits a set of instructions or an instruction, gets it by the judge, gets it by the prosecutor. The defendant then later complains about that because it misstates the law. The Colorado Supreme Court decision in People versus Zapata probably is the best authority that we have to examine to determine whether or not there is a question of invited error. There was none. A review of the record demonstrates the following. The foreclosure decree was an erroneous decree. It was wrong. It was procedurally correct, but it was wrong. The statement in that decree as to lien priority completely turned the super priority lien provision on its head. As a consequence, as soon as GMAC became involved in the case, the motion that GMAC filed had absolutely no misstatements of any kind. We hear an argument about the fact that the investors weren't party to that. The investors were identified by GMAC to the court. Clearly, if the court felt that GMAC's effort to correct the foreclosure decree needed input from the investors, the court could have easily said, they're necessary parties, bring them into this. But that expands the scope of the foreclosure decree. In this instance, the decree needed to get corrected. It was corrected. What happened subsequently, though, in granting the motion for summary judgment is where the error lies. And that's where we need this court to look at the comfortable language of the statute. In the Quail Creek condominium case, the Court of Appeals already recognized the fact that this priority is limited. In this case, the foreclosure decree needed to get corrected to reflect that. It did, but then what happened was a mistake. At this juncture, GMAC would request that the correcting order be granted, or in the alternative, it be given its redemption rights back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baglia, and thank you, Mr. Sullivan, for your excellent arguments. They were helpful to us. We appreciate that help. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.